Good afternoon. Welcome to the State and Local Government Finance Election Omnibus Bill Conference Committee. Today is Wednesday, May 3rd, 2023, and we do have a quorum present, so we will begin. Today, we're just going to do a walkthrough of the side-by-side of Article 2 and Article 3. And if I could ask Mr. Gehring and Senate Counsel to please go to the testifier table. I want to start by thanking you both for your tremendous and hard work in getting us ready for today. And when you're ready, whoever's going to begin, if you'll state your name for the record and begin your walkthrough. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm Matt Gehring from House Research, along with Senate Counsel. And I think, Madam Chair, what we'll do is the same type of walkthrough that we did for the elections article. So we're going to walk through the table summary that you see in your packet as opposed to the side-by-side. But as we go through, if members have specific questions about sections that are referenced in the table and want to look at the language in the side-by-side, we can direct you to where to find that, and we're happy to answer questions on those details as they come up. And Ms. James and I will just go back and forth through the table as we did before, depending on whether something is House only or Senate only. So the first row that you see on the table is a set of sections that reflect the inclusion of language that requires redesign of the state emblems, so both the state flag and the state seal. There are policy differences between the House and the Senate on these provisions. The House includes the necessary statutory structure to implement the new state flag and state seal effective May 11th, 2024, and the Senate adopts the same commission as the House related to this work, but does not include the statutory references to make those changes permanent, absent further direction from the legislature. Next is the establishment of the State Fire Museum. This section between the House and the Senate is similar. There's some minor stylistic differences between the two. It designates the Bill and Bonnie Daniels Firefighters Hall in Minneapolis as the official State Fire Museum. And then next is a House-only section, which is on page R59 with side-by-side. This is a set of sections related to the legislative process. So there's a section that extends the, sets the time for convening the legislative session during an odd-numbered year to the second Monday in January as opposed to the first Monday, and also amends the definition of legislative day.
Madam Chair, members, Stephanie James, Senate Counsel. The next series of sections relates to the legislative employees and specifically allows legislative employees to elect an exclusive representative to collectively bargain on terms and conditions of employment.
And then following that, Madam Chair, is a set of provisions that are House only from related to the establishment of the legislature's budget. This proposal would provide for a statutory appropriation of the funding for the House, Senate, and the Legislative Coordinating Commission. Also within the set of sections is a change to the number of leadership members that can receive leadership pay and other conforming changes to implement the statutory appropriation structure. And then top of the next page of the table is a House-only change to the that affects the legislative reference library. The House proposes to reduce the number of physical reports that an agency is required to deliver to the legislative reference library from 2 to 1. And then following that is a series of sections that come from recommendations of the Legislative Coordinating Commission. There's a number of modifications and updates to laws that relate to either the authority of the Legislative Coordinating Commission or the councils and commissions that they administer. And then next, you'll see a row related to state employee contracts. There's similar language on both the House and Senate sides of the side-by-side. This language removes the role for the legislature to approve collective bargaining agreements and arbitration awards, and also includes necessary conforming changes to make that happen. It does retain some oversight within the SER for compensation plans, but just not the collective bargaining agreements. And then next, you'll see the role for a cybersecurity commission. This is a set of changes recommended by the Legislative Commission on Cybersecurity to provide some process and structure for how the commission conducts closed meetings, which is currently authorized in their statute, but there's no sort of method for doing so. This would provide that method between the House and the Senate. The language is similar with some stylistic differences.
This is.
And then, Madam Chair, next on the row, you see a series of sections that extend really throughout the article on a number of pages. This adopts language that has been recommended by the Legislative Audit Commission related to the work of the Legislative Auditor. And then next is the Senate-only section related to fiscal notes.
Yes, members, the next item is a Senate-only provision that requires that Senate or that fiscal notes be prepared with an assumption.
Excuse me, can we wait just one moment? There is a concern that some of the Senate members do not have these documents with them. So I believe Mr. Westerman is bringing extras forward. Thank you. I could ask you again at the beginning of page 2, if that would be all right with you.
Sure, Madam Chair. So backing up to the top of page 2 is the House-only section, House Section 4, that reduces the number of physical reports that an agency must deliver to the Legislative Reference Library from 2 to 1. And then following that is the set of Legislative Coordinating Commission sections that I mentioned. These are the sections that provide a number of miscellaneous policy updates to the laws that govern the authority of the Legislative Coordinating Commission, as well as several of the councils and commissions that are within the LCC's jurisdiction. State employee contracts, this is the set of sections I mentioned that removes the requirement that the legislature approve collective bargaining agreements through the existing SER process, but maintains that process for compensation plans. And then following that, the changes to the Cybersecurity Commission. These are the sections that I mentioned that provide structure for the Legislative Commission on Cybersecurity to conduct closed meetings. And then following that then is the set of sections that relate to the work of the Legislative Auditor that were recommended by the Legislative Audit Commission. And then after that is the Senate-only section related to fiscal notes that Ms. James can describe.
Madam Chair and members, the next item is the fiscal note line, and this is a provision in the Senate bill that requires that fiscal notes be completed with an assumption of legal validity. The next item, state deposits collateral, this is a provision that is similar in the two bills with just stylistic differences that allows financial institutions to provide different kinds of collateral to secure the state's deposits. The next item is a Senate-only provision. This is on the top of page 3. This establishes a Hmong Special Guerrilla Units Remembrance Day. The next item is a provision that is similar in the two bills with only stylistic differences that modifies the process for the subject of data that's held by the state to challenge the validity or the accuracy of the data. The next item is the same in the two bills. It's a series of sections that transfers the strategic planning functions from the Department of Administration to Management and Budget. The next line is in the Senate only, establishing a Youth Advisory Council. This council is patterned in its enabling statute after the ethnic council statutes. And the next item is a new council on LGBTQIA Minnesotans. Senate-only provision. The next item, interagency agreements, has policy differences between the Senate and the House. The House repeals the requirement for a report about interagency transfers. The Senate exempts certain information from having to be included in that report.
And then, Madam Chair, next on the chart, you'll see the row appointments and ban the box. There's a series of what I'd call sort of miscellaneous policy changes to the process for conducting open appointments and administering the open appointments process. This is the process that the governor uses when required to make appointments. Built within the set of sections is the ban the box language that would apply that policy concept to the process of making appointments through that open appointments process. And then next, Madam Chair, on page, starting on the top of page 4 of the table, is language with policy differences between the House and the Senate. This is the language that would provide a deadline for Senate action on governor appointments and provides that if 60 legislative days have passed and the Senate has not taken action, that the appointee would be considered confirmed. There are policy differences between the House and the Senate on the section, including an extended effective date on the House or on the Senate side, excuse me. And then next, there are changes to the Compensation Council, the House proposal here. There are policy differences between the House and the Senate. The House proposal would provide that the Compensation Council direct the salary amounts for constitutional officers as well as agency commissioners and certain other agency officers. The Senate has language that doesn't amend the Compensation Council statute, but instead implements the Compensation Council's recommendations as adopted in the report from this year. And then next, the next row you see is the Capitol Campus Design Framework. There's both policy and stylistic differences between the House and the Senate on this language. This is the section that requires the Capitol Area Architectural and Planning Board to update the Capitol Mall Design Framework. Among the differences is a requirement on the House side that there'd be no loss of green space on the Capitol complex, and there's also a different there's a different deadline for completion of this work between the House and the Senate. And then next is the House-only provision that provides standards for the Commissioner of Administration when redeveloping the Ford building site. There's a requirement there that the Ford building site must include mixed-use development and identify ground-level space for locally owned businesses if that building is redeveloped by the Commissioner. And then following that is a House-only section that requires that the Commissioner of Administration provide space in the State Capitol building for the Capitol Barber to maintain operations. And then following that, the bottom of page 4 of the table is an identical section between the House and the Senate that authorizes the Commissioner of Management and Budget to apply for grants to help fulfill the duties of that department. And then next at the top of page 5 is similar language between the House and the Senate that requires MMB approval for changes to rates for interagency billing. There's a number of other changes built into there in the way that MMB and the executive branch charges agencies for access to and use of statewide systems.
And Madam Chair, I'd just like to point out that we need in that block on the right-hand column after the word Senate only, there should be a colon there. The Senate doesn't only lower the threshold, but that is a Senate only part
Thank
of the
you.
Provision. Yeah.
And then next on the chart, Madam Chair, in the middle of page 5 is asset preservation projects. This is a House-only set of sections that clarify the types of capital projects that qualify as asset preservation. And then next, there is similar language between the House and the Senate establishing the Office of Enterprise Translations. And then following that is a Senate-only section.
The next section is Senate only that provides for the Commissioner of Administration to set maximum acceptable global warming potential for certain materials and eligible projects, and this includes concrete and rebar. It applies to certain state buildings and highway projects. Also, the Commissioner of Administration and Transportation are required to establish a process for incorporating that maximum allowable global warming potential in bidding procedures, and then it requires the Commissioner of Administration to establish a pilot program that is to obtain data from vendors about the life cycle greenhouse gas emissions of procured products. And also, this section establishes a task force on environmental standards procurement that will enlighten and inform the work of the Commissioner of Administration and Transportation on these practices. The next item, energy efficiency in state buildings, is a Senate-only provision. This is an update to the sustainable building requirements related to energy efficiency in state buildings and renewable sources on site.
Then, Madam Chair, the next row there you'll see is a house-only section related to the designer selection board. This set of sections increases the project cost threshold for determining whether the project is required to go through the designer selection board in choosing a designer. And then next is similar language between the House and the Senate with some just very minor grammatical differences, establishing the Office of Collaboration and Dispute Resolution within the Department of Administration. And then following that is language that is similar again with some minor grammatical differences between the House and the Senate to establish the Office of Enterprise Sustainability. And then next is some language with policy differences between the House and the Senate, requiring the Commissioner of Administration to charge users of electric vehicle charging stations on the Capitol complex electric service fee. And I would point out that within this row here, we're identifying both the policy that's being proposed here as well as a repealer that comes later in the article of the existing law on this topic. And then next is a series of sections that is similar between the House and the Senate, but there are both some stylistic as well as some substantive differences between the House and the Senate. This is language that expands and amends the existing laws that govern grant oversight by the Department of Administration. Then next, in the middle of page 7, you'll see a row for procurement. This is House-only language that provides standards for state contracting for some types of services during an emergency and also prohibits the use of the best and final offer or solicitation process for building and construction contracts if the contract is awarded based on competitive bids.
The next item is a Senate-only item. This is regarding the targeted business program, the targeted business procurement program for state agencies. This increases the preferences for targeted group businesses from 6% to 12% and also increases the cap from $25,000 to $100,000 on the amount of contracts that that can be given out without competition to targeted group businesses. The next item is the same in both bodies. This is a procurement report to the legislature. It eliminates obsolete language about that report. The next item is similar in the two bills, but with stylistic differences. These series of sections, many sections in both bills, implement the recommendations of the Advisory Task Force on State Employment and Retention of Employees with Disabilities. Next item is also the same in both bodies, although there's a capitalization error on the Senate side. This is compensation for law enforcement officers. It precludes pattern bargaining during collective bargaining for law enforcement salaries. Next item, also the same in the two bills, is about the Region Advisory Council. It changes the Senate appointing authority for that council, and it also makes meetings of the council subject to the open meetings law, the legislative open meetings law. The next item, same in both bills, relating to the Historical Society. This is a series of technical changes and also an elimination of a preclusion on a Historical Society employee serving on a mediation board for disputes between agencies and the Historical Society on renovation projects. The next line is relates to the Healthy Eating Here at Home program, and it's the same in both bills. It expands the types of locations at which Healthy Eating Here at Home grants can be used, money from the grants. The next,
can I just say for the people who may be listening, this is also referred to as the Market Box program, just so anyone who's listening would know. All right, thank you, and I apologize for the interruption. Okay.
Madam Chair, the next series of sections is the Senate only. This relates to the Board of Cosmetology. It creates a hair technician license through the board, and it also simplifies licenses for salons. And the next item, the same in the two bills. This establishes staggered four-year terms for the members of the Mississippi River Parkway Commission.
And Madam Chair, at the bottom of page 8, you'll see a House-only set of sections. It's titled Notary Public. This set of sections allows notaries who are licensed in Minnesota, as well as past and current elected officials in Minnesota, to perform civil marriages. Then moving ahead to the top of page 9 is language. This is the Private Cemeteries Act. The language between the two bodies is mostly the same, with some differences in the way the criminal penalties are provided in Subdivision 2, as you see noted on the table. This section adjusts the roles of the State Archaeologists and the Indian Affairs Council and their work related to assessment and handling of human remains that are discovered throughout the state. And then next is similar language between the House and the Senate. I believe the language, the differences are mostly stylistic here, related to the Public Land Survey Monuments Program. So there's an appropriation in both bodies to fund the work of this program, and this is the statutory language necessary to make the program happen.
The next item, Senate only, public safety classified positions. This modifies a list of classified positions in the public safety sector.
And then next is a House-only provision that transitions the existing Christopher Columbus Day state holiday to Indigenous Peoples Day. And then following that is similar language between the House and the Senate. As you may recall, previously the session, the legislature adopted Juneteenth as a state holiday, and there was an issue with the effective date, so the House and Senate both have adopted language to make sure that the effective date allows for that holiday to be effective this year. The House makes the effective date June 19th, which will be Juneteenth of 2023. The Senate makes the effective date immediate. And then next, Madam Chair, on this chart, you'll see the Legislative Task Force on Aging. There's similar language between the House and the Senate with very minor grammatical differences. This creates the Legislative Task Force on Aging, as you might expect. Then finally, in the bottom of page 9, you see a House-only section that creates the Infrastructure Resilience Advisory Task Force. And then moving ahead to the top of page 10 is similar language between the House and the Senate that provides for a study of implementing a grants management system enterprise-wide for executive branch agencies. And then next is identical language between the House and the Senate providing for a study of for an office of small agencies, again, within the Department of Administration to assist small agencies up throughout state government. Within the repealers, there's a repealer of a required transfer of money from the state parking account to the general fund. That's the parking account transfer repeal. There's a repealer of the Regent Candidate Advisory Council. This comes from the Legislative Coordinating Commission provisions. And then lastly is a House-only provision that repeals an existing statutory requirement that an election polling place be located in the Evergreen Fire Department Fire Hall, which is located in St. Louis County. And then, Madam Chair, moving ahead, next on the chart, you'll see the information technology article. We've already walked through that article for you, so I think if it's okay with you, we'll skip that chart. Right. And then we'll move ahead to page 12, which is a Senate-only article with some miscellaneous finance provisions, and then the grants management article, and Ms. James will walk through both of those.
Madam Chair and members, the Senate's bill had an article with these finance provisions that are now blended in with your side-by-side. It is a variety of generally technical changes relating to statutes that touch on financial things. So, for example, there's a definition of transfer. There's a deadline set for the November forecast instead of being a certain day. It sets an actual date for the forecast. It changes the Senate chair, who has to be consulted regarding variables in the expenditure part of the forecast. It requires a detailed fund balance analysis of the general fund annually. It modifies application of budget surpluses. It updates statutes relating to the tobacco bonds, some sort of cleanup from when we did first revenue bonds and then shifted them to appropriation bonds. And that's those sections. And then finally, going to page 13 of the table that you have, both bills have a section that deals with requirements for financial review of applicants for grants. And these are different between the two bodies. And some of the differences include that the Senate's version applies both to nonprofits and to for-profit businesses. Another difference is that the Senate it makes this applicable to subgrants as well as original grants. Another significant difference is that the Senate's version treats legislatively named grants in a different way, putting a pause on those until the legislature next adjourns.
And Madam Madam Chair, that's the end of the walkthrough.
Thank you very much. Members, do you have any questions that you would like to ask of House or Senate nonpartisan staff? I do not see any questions. I would like to thank you for walking us through these provisions. I'm sorry, you had a question? All right, Chair Murphy.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I understand that there is language in the bill that talks about legislative days. I'm in the House proposal. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if we could just dig into that a little further as we talk about legislative days and confirmations. There's some interaction there. So I would just like to get clear about the House proposal there.
Would you like to describe the legislative day proposal that's in the bill itself?
Madam Chair, sure. So just to orient you, this section is on page R59 of the side-by-side. So if you'd like to look at the actual statutory language, you can find it there. And what you're looking for there is House Section 3, so on the left side of the page. And what the language proposes to do is amend the definition of legislative day. So currently, legislative day occurs any day on which a body of the legislature is called to order. And the proposal here is instead of counting a legislative day any day that a body is called to order, instead it would be a legislative day on any day during which either body gives a bill a third reading, adopts a rule of procedure or organization, elects a university regent, or confirms a gubernatorial appointment, or votes to override a veto.
And Mr. Gehring, it might be interesting for the public to know that on average we have about 60 legislative days in a year, and we have a maximum number of 120 legislative days within the session.
Madam Chair.
Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Gehring. The description in the House language is not a set number, of course, but would be a more variable number. But has the House or in your review of this, do you have a sense of what it would mean versus this current 60 days, 60 legislative days?
Mr. Gehring.
Madam Chair, I think the as amended, I think what this would provide is more flexibility for the legislature to meet on additional days during a session that then wouldn't count against the 120-day constitutional limit that Chair Cleburne mentioned. I don't have a particular analysis to suggest how many more days that would affect, but certainly there are more days during a legislative session that a body's called to order versus days on which one of the conditions I mentioned occur. So I would expect that the impact of this would be to allow the legislature to meet more frequently during sessions than it is currently within that 120-day period.
Thank you.
Further question? Paula?
None.
Okay. Lead Nash.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to follow up on the Senator's question relative to legislative days, I do know that there has been a tremendous amount of concern issued by outstate legislators as to what this does during the definition of legislative days, what it does to the tax implication that they have relative to their housing allotment. I've raised that to Chair Cleburne, and I do think that it is something that is substantial for outstate legislators, and we have them in all of our caucuses. Mm-hmm. And I think that I would urge some caution as we move forward on this, because it was not addressed in our floor debate, nor was it in an amendment, but it does have some fairly far-flung implications as to tax liability for outstate legislators.
Mm-hmm. You will be pleased to know that I heard your question. And I did, in fact, reach out to both Mr. Gehring and to our HR department in the legislature to see if, in fact, it would have a financial impact. It does not, under the tax code, have a financial impact. I do have a memo that I would be happy to provide you with the clarification and the appropriate references that you might need to, that you might want to review.
Madam Chair, I would appreciate that, as I had not heard that you'd had that discussion, and we were still on the presumption that it did have some fairly serious implications.
Thank you, Lead Nash. I did follow up with Representative Doubt, who brought the question to me initially, and I thought that I had shared it with you on the floor as well, but I could be wrong about that. I will be happy to get that information to you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions regarding Legislative Day or anything else? Is there anyone in the public who wanted to speak today to the issues that we reviewed today? Okay. Seeing none, I believe that concludes our business for the day. Thank you for being here, and our next meeting will be tomorrow.
It will.
At the call of the chair?
The Senate chair.
The call of the Senate chair?
So it could be at any hour.
Thank you very much for being with us today, and with that, our meeting is adjourned.